All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Hello, listeners. Welcome again to All the Rage. And this week we have a couple of subjects on the boil. We're going to talk about taking control of the media, putting our viewpoint out there as best we can. And I'm very happy to say that joining us for this week's show is Jamie Woodcock. He's going to talk all about what he knows on this and what I don't know, and how we can go forward. However, first things first, Jamie, tell us about a little strike action that you've been involved in recently.
So we're entering into another set of strikes in the university at the moment. And I think it's kind of surprising in a way, because if you look at strikes across the UK, who would have predicted it would be university lecturers that would be taking, you know, so many strikes in such a short period of time. I think I was trying to work this out earlier today. I think once this kind of next couple of weeks are out of the way, I'll have taken 30 days of strike action in 2 years, which is quite a lot.
Impressive.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's quite a few. I mean, you know, it obviously comes from a lot of what's happening to higher education at the moment. And we've had, you know, a series of strikes over pensions and pay before. And this time, really, you know, they've kind of kicked the can down the road in the last strikes, you know, decided that they would kind of assess whether they want to give us a pension or not. And this strike now has 70 universities taking part in it, and is a strike over the fact lecturers haven't had a pay rise in 10 years, over changes to pension, over workload and stress, but also over the gender and race pay gap in universities. Most universities are taking strike action. And, you know, I think it kind of ties in a little bit with the topic today of, you know, thinking about media and how these things are reported, because, you know, a lot of the press around this strike is around, you know, students losing classes or, you know, academics already being paid quite a bit or so on. And, you know, there's been a real challenge to get the message of the strikes across in mainstream media.
Yeah, we've been there before, both myself and Dave, I think, where getting exactly what's going on communicated to people is never easy. Their own willful ignorance really doesn't help either. But putting those views out there. So just quickly, to give us a bit of an example, just to give the listeners an idea, what exactly is, would sum up like exactly what you're aiming for in a way that we can, because I'm going to come back to this when we talk about media, nice simple messaging sort of thing. What are you out there for? What is your main goals?
So I think to try and sum it up in as short as possible is to say that, you know, universities have become this incredibly expensive place for people to come and study, and none of that money is going to staff, and is instead being misused to build an education system that neither academics or students, have a say in. And the strikes are really trying to change that.
Cool. Brilliant. Nicely done, mate. Yeah. That's beautifully put. Okay. Sorry, Dave, did you want to jump in on that?
No, just to say that the universities that took part in the industrial action, all of our members, for a conscientious clause we have with the employer, did not cross those picket lines.
Yeah, very good point to add. Thank you very much. Cool. Okay, so the main body of this week's show, as I said in the intro, it's funny actually, I just talked about summing things up because I'm really, really shit at that. So I'm hoping that I can actually learn how to do it this evening in the process of talking about this. Yeah, Jamie's put a really, really good point here. You're involved in a strike action. It's a major factor of your daily life, your working life, which of course we know working life structures so much of everyday existence anyway. And, you know, you're out there and you're giving it your all and you're making sacrifices and no one's even getting the message across. You know, it's not a question of people understand what you're doing. And many people agree, and some people might disagree. Maybe they think strikes aren't the way to do these things. But nevertheless, that is so much easier to take from people when they do actually have some understanding about what it is that you're doing. But they don't get that. And why don't they get that? Well, as we've discussed on this show many times and plenty of other people have discussed before, because we have a media in Britain which is run by billionaires in the press. We have an establishment media which does not like to give voice to working class people and their needs and the things that they do and the fights that they get involved in or the reasons why. They like a great deal of simplicity. Now, simplicity in communicating messages, as we've already outlined tonight, can be a good thing, and also it can miss a great amount of detail. So you need to balance it very, very well. So the main aspect of what we're trying to do this evening is, I've roughly speaking called the show's title Left Wing Media. What I mean by this is, how do we get hold of the media narrative? How do we get control in our lives to be able to say, this is what we are doing, this is what it's about, this is what we're fighting, this is what we're facing, and this is what we plan to do about it? How do we get those messages across? What do we use? What is the medium or mediums that we use? Is there any future in a press, you know, a printed press, or is that done now? Do we need to be dominating YouTube, social media, Instagram, etc., etc.? So really, this is more of a conversation, and it's begun by a discussion myself and Dave had on the show the other week in regards to the BBC and whether it is worth saving. Now, one story that struck a chord in my brain recently, and I believe this was, yes, I listened to this via Navarra Media, and they talked about someone whose name escapes me, but she works in booking people onto Question Time and getting people into the audience. Now, for those of you outside of Britain who don't know, Question Time is a supposed flagship BBC show where people gather in certain different parts of the country with a live studio audience, and they discuss the issues of the day. There's normally representatives of the three major political parties, maybe the odd fringe person. There's normally a newspaper columnist or someone else who makes a living out of having opinions, usually the more extreme the better. And then there's the occasional what the fuck guest of someone who's just like, why are you here and how did you get in the room? And they field questions from people in the audience. And it is presided over by some BBC establishment crony of some description or another. They decide how long people get to talk, you know, what the views they get to express effectively. Now, what they found is one of the program bookers, for want of a better term, we'll call her that, was actually sending out information prior to events, whether they were going to any town, if they were going to Bolton, if they were going to Manchester, if they were going to London, to far right groups, be them Britain First or the Old English Defence League or people like that, and saying, would you like to send people into our audience? We can get you to ask some questions. What's happened now that this story is broken to this person, nobody really knows. We don't know if she's been fired or whatever, but basically this person was actively bringing the far right into one of the most mainstream programmes. Now, a few weeks ago, there was an occasion when an extremely far-right person was speaking from the audience when her viewpoints were shown to be factually inaccurate. She just yelled rubbish, et cetera, this kind of thing. Now, this is very dangerous, certainly in my opinion. And it's this kind of stuff which gives us the idea of what difference would there be if the BBC was privately owned or publicly owned when people like this get on the air? I suppose that's my opening question to everyone else on the show tonight. Jamie, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, because I always feel really torn with the BBC of thinking, you know, isn't it good that we have a, you know, a non-privately owned form of media in the UK? But then you see the kind of things they do. And it's not like this is the first time, you know, the BBC has platformed far right voices and so on. And I think, you know, with Question Time, the problem is sometimes you get these things that appear as if they're news, but really they're, you know, it's a form of entertainment in a way. You know, they want to bring on these controversial voices, not because, you know, they're trying to have a political debate, but they're trying to have something that scandalizes, that gets some headlines, that gets viewers in and so on.
That gets clicks exactly. On YouTube later on. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's not doing it because it's a public organization that wants to have a debate on these issues. It's trying to drive controversy. And, you know, the problem is, for the person doing the booking, it's much more palatable to to have some far right like clown come on and shout things than it is to have someone from the left come on and make arguments about politics or economics, because that's not controversial in the way that they can kind of host it. But I think maybe just to like tack back to the debate that you said you had on the previous show, because I think for all the problems of the BBC, you know, if it were to be privatized, I think we'd see a kind of knock-on effect across the kind of mainstream media kind of ecosystem, I guess, of things getting much, much worse. Because like if you watch American news, for example, you know, these things are even more extreme than we have in the UK. So I think it's kind of worth defending having a public broadcasting company, but also like posing those questions of like, why on earth are they able to do the things that they've been doing recently?
Yeah, very, very good point. Dave, what do you, would you make on this?
Yeah, there is an argument for, I mean, I think looking at the BBC and the companies they're hiring to do things like Question Time, and the people they're picking, now, I, as I've said to John, that Question Time was on its knees, as BBC Current Affairs Department was on its knees until 2015, when Jeremy Corbyn came in, and they just jumped on him. And, you know, they ignored that geezer for, you know, until the general election was called. But I would say it was on its knees, you know, pre that general election 2017. And the people that they started picking in for Question Time, and, you know, and you look back at the BBC, and its main role was a propaganda machine for World War II, if I remember rightly. And, you know, I just don't know if they're fit for purpose anymore. And as I said, with future generations coming through, they're not watching the news and stuff anymore. They're finding things like Netflix and YouTube and Amazon Prime and all these streams and stuff. And I think the news only really excited a certain age group. I'd say over 50s, to be honest. I don't think the people that we really want to get involved in politics and actually get the vote out were or are watching the news. And I think we saw an alternative media in social media, which I think was hugely successful. Hugely successful. And I just don't know if it's fit for purpose, especially if they behave like that. Saying that, they do some wonderful documentaries. But I think their current affairs is pony, actually.
That's a classic, isn't it, with the BBC? I love their underwater shit. It's just the politics stuff. Yeah, all those swimming things, they're great. Yeah, all those big animals eating each other. Yeah, but it's just, I don't like the other stuff. Okay, yeah, before I kick that back to Jamie, I was just going to say, see, another kind of question I have for perhaps both of you is, I've always seen Question Time as a total circus. I mean, I've never really been into it, but that's just one example. But with other examples, you know, we know how biased Newsnight is. We know what the Radio 4 Today program is. And it's very easy for me to ignore this stuff, because otherwise I'd just be sit there fuming, you know, and into thin air, because, you know, who cares what I think? No one can hear me. But can we allow these very well-known institutions, all of which have taken a hit, Dave, you're absolutely right, because we talked about Question Time. It's not the only one. There's less listeners to the Today program. You know, John Humphreys turned a lot of people off, and he was quite far right, and now he works for the Daily Mail, I think. And you know, this the people. But can we risk ignoring it, or is it just going to, you know, do we have to have some element of that? Bearing in mind what you've said about younger generations, Jamie, I'll kick that back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree that. Yeah, I mean, I like the nature programs on BBC and so on, but like, I guess the thing to think about is these are all different kind of, they're all different arenas that people argue about ideas in some way or other. And I think, you know, like BBC, like the, as you say, like the people who watch the news are going to be a particular demographic. And then there's another demographic that will get their news and debate people on Twitter. And there's like another much younger demographic that will do these things through Snapchat or TikTok or other social media platforms. And I think maybe the way to think of it is like, what are the interventions the left can make into different kinds of media? And like, how worthwhile is it for us to spend our time on them? And I guess that's where like the BBC is an interesting one, because it's meant to be funded by the state and it's meant to be, you know, have some small element of democracy to its programming. I still think it's worth like posing an argument about why it should be better. I think the problem with social media is people think of these as like, you know, arenas where everyone can have a debate and you can have, you know, you can put forward ideas and so on. But like, you know, the evidence from YouTube is that if you're putting right-wing or fascist propaganda up on YouTube, it's going to be way easier to find than progressive media. So I think it's about figuring out like what are the difficulties or the opportunities in each of these forms of media and figuring out like, as the left, what is it worth us spending our time doing and how can we do it differently on each platform, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I'm actually getting at as part of the show tonight. And also, I mean, I love podcasts. I think we discussed this a few times, but you know, look at the people who have big podcasts. I mean, Joe Rogan is someone. He's not exactly. I mean, he's got his odd moments of clarity, but I wouldn't call him a comrade. And he's got absolutely masses of people listening to it. YouTube, as you say, very good example. There's shit tons of far right stuff that's popular on there. Excuse me. One of the mediums which has helped to make the career of Jordan Peterson, of all people, and equally social media, like you say, people. There's not really a social media has its own elements of being a bit of a cesspit. I mean, it is an extremely useful communication tool, and I think Dave's absolutely right to put faith. And I definitely think we need to have a presence there, but faith in it and the younger generations picking up from there. But equally, you know, you can get lots of stuff on there that's just total bullshit. You can get plenty of. I wary of using the term fake news, but I mean, it is a term. There is such a thing, I suppose. So, there is that. And also, you know, another part was coming to, maybe we can go into this now, was I wanted to talk about communication from a more left and progressive perspective, and also from a trade union perspective. So social media is perhaps a good example. Maybe Facebook's better at this. I don't know. I'm not on any of them, but Twitter certainly. You know, we have very complex, detailed ideas, disciplines, you know, Marxism itself and all the very various offshoots of that to communicate to people. And if we advocate these views, if we believe in these ideas, then we obviously think they affect people's everyday lives. But they're a bugger to communicate. They're deep, they're heavy. You know, how do we make these things more understandable, more accessible? Jamie, do you want to go for that one first, and then I'll ask Dave.
Yeah, so I mean, this is an issue that I think about quite a lot, and I think is really like a really really important question. Of, I guess you could think of it of like, you know, like popular science, of like how, you know, how some of those documentaries on the BBC get stuff across, or you know, if you're you know, if you've ever come across like Carl Sagan and the stuff that he did about like physics and kind of popular science, is like, I think the left has to figure out a way of making complex ideas accessible to people. And I think too much of the left loves to spend time arguing about like really arcane parts of like Marx, or, you know, kind of out theorying each other, which is kind of pointless if you think about intervening on social media or in other platforms. It's like, we need to figure a way to have those discussions that people can access and can take part in. And that's where like right-wing media is like miles ahead. Like if you come across like Jordan Peterson or some of these other right-wing figures, they like make these ideas sound accessible and like engage people in the debate around. And I think, you know, too many people are like, no, you know, we shouldn't like dumb down our ideas. It's like a totally different process, like popularizing ideas.
Yeah, I mean, the one way I would, I don't say a lot about Jordan Peterson, I haven't got the time for the twat, but the one thing talent I would say he does have is he makes reactionary, bigoted people think they're smart. Yeah. He has a beautiful way of making you sound like there's a really good reason for your prejudice, you know, and it's all to do with chaos dragons and shit like that. Yeah, Dave, what do you think?
Well, just on podcasts, I would point to Michael Moore's, which has hit 2 million, and it just started off as a fun sort of thing, but he's now getting popular film stars and music artists on there to talk about Trump and things happening in America. So he seems to have captured something, and I think Jamie's correct. I think we should be talking to people and inviting people to talk about things to them that matter, things like universal credit, 0 hours contracts, jobs, and in a way it's a little bit like the election, where we were looking at over 55 and talking about over 55s in those marginalised parts of the country, but there are under 55s that are still in those marginalised areas, but I don't think we're talking about things that they fully understand. They're never going to understand Marxism and socialism and communism, and they wouldn't know what it means because they don't read anything about it in the papers, because they don't buy the papers. And I think we've got to come from a different angle, and we look at Navarra Media, who do have some really good guests on there, but they have guests that agree with them, or they have guests that they, you know,
Well, to be fair, mate, they do put a shout out to some other people, but they don't get much in return.
Yeah,
so far of the Labour Party leadership candidates, only one of them has been on.
Yeah, but we're not attracting the normal people. So I'll give you an example of ethnic minorities and their attitudes towards politics. It just doesn't, whatever those people decide, we're just going to have to swallow it. That's where I was growing up. We just put up with it, you know? And looking at the swing we had for young voters in the last two election, which was unprecedented. So there was something something was getting tapped in, where we had Stormzy and people like that. We had the Grenfell, we had Grime for Corbyn, and they were on board with that, and that made a huge swing for people who've never voted for or registered to vote. And I think we should be getting them and speaking their language and the things that affect them, you know, because, as I said, I understand what left-wing commentators are talking about. It's fantastic. I could listen to it all day. But I explain that to I explain that to my kids, and I've got to go through everything because they're just not switched on with it. They get it and they understand the headlines and they're into it. But it's just saying, well, what will it mean for them? What will it mean in regards to universal credit, 0 hours contracts, things like parts of the country where it's cheaper to get a cab than it is to get a bleeding bus that comes once a day, and things like fast broadband where they can work from home because we're in a digital revolution, and they're using that digital revolution. Rather than the traditional forms there's so much things we've really got to look at, because these kids who voted the last election at record numbers, it's how we're going to keep them for the next one.
Yeah, Jamie, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is part of the kind of the big problem of how do you connect like big P political issues with people's lived experience. And I think that's that kind of challenge of like popular media, or, you know, that kind of translating like theory into things that make sense to people, is I think that's where like the big challenge lies, is like, how do you talk to people about these issues? Will you talk about them through exactly what you're saying, like 0 hour contracts, like experiences of work? And I think that kind of like disconnect that a lot of the left has around like the politics of work is one of the things that where things fall down. Is we should be able to speak to all those people. You know, we should be able to speak to their experience of shitty contracts, of, you know, working multiple jobs, of traveling a long way to get to work. Like, those are things we should be able to tap into and talk to people. Sometimes I think about it of like, if you want to make an intervention into these platforms, you need to have like a hook with people. And like all across the country, there's a hook with so many people that is, they hate their work and it's really shit and there's no union there. And somehow there's a kind of often a failure to connect to those lived experiences. And I think where people are able to do that, that's where that left media is so successful. It's like tapping into lived experience.
What we do is, and it's interesting, because we're currently in dispute with our employer, and obviously they've taken us to a millionaire's court to try and discredit the ballot, and we've had to re-ballot. But what we found is, and the TUC, what they found is about our successful campaigns, and apparently they're the most successful trade union campaigns ever, is we used the traditional Facebook and Twitter, and that really worked. But what we found was, and it's a portion of the campaign that really worked, Jamie, was gate meetings. And what that meant was our reps were going down and talking to people face to face, eye to eye, as some trade union officials do it, because it's a traditional method. And what it is some trade, and I think we should take this, I think Momentum probably could take this on board. What we found in when we're training young reps is we're training them to make eye contact and listen. And, you know, people's views may differ, but it's important we listen to them, yeah? So if we get into these places, not necessarily the metropolitan areas of the UK, but the bits that we're talking about, and I think it's what Rebecca Long-Bailey was talking about, is actually getting down there and eye to eye with people and talking to them. It may, but I it's about how young people, because it's their future, isn't it? So they may be worried about lots of things, and I don't think, in regards to a media, and linking that, and of course, secondly, we're talking about funding as well. So the funding of Ofcom's guidelines are pretty much jumping through loops. So that's why this station has its servers abroad, because I just couldn't put a transmitter on FM in this country. I've got to jump through hoops. And it's a system that's made, that is designed not to have a left-wing medium, in my view. They've got millions. These people have got millions and millions and millions. So we've also got to look at that. And I think Navarro had done some good stuff on YouTube, because I look at the election night and I saw viewership on election night coverage was 650,000, which was wow, you know. And I ended up watching that. So someone was watching it. And an alternative point of view. I just wonder whether it's the people that we actually are aiming to get involved, you know. Because, as I said, that a record number of people registered to vote under 25s. It was magnificent. It beat 2017 hands down. So how do we build on that? So, And also bear in mind that the latest figures again show a huge loss on circulation in regards to print media, which is great, I think, because kids don't buy newspapers, you know. So there's a lot to think about, a lot to build on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit on one of the really important points when we're talking about left media, with the stuff about, you know, having conversations at the gates, talking to people at eye level and so on. Is like, if we're talking about left media, like, what is it that we want? Like, what's the objective? And I think this is where sometimes when we look at different left projects, you know, whether they're finding new ways to do things through the election coverage and so on, is like, what is it we actually want people to do as a result of us talking to them or hearing our arguments or whatever? And I think for some of these projects, it's about you should go out and vote, or you should get involved in debates or whatever. But I think for me, like, if what's the argument you'd want to have with more people? Well, the argument I'd want to have with more people is that you can organize at work, and that's where real change comes from. And I think that's where this kind of dynamic of like, we can form weaker connections online, like you can get those ideas out there, but nothing replaces that face-to-face organizing that people have in their workplace or in their community. It's like, how can we use left media as like leverage to get some of those things happening in local communities? I think that's like the real problem with this kind of topic of left media or alternative media.
One of the things I love most about the last couple of elections that we've had is we saw this whole kind of demonization process of Jeremy Corbyn to the point where, you know, you thought he had horns. And yet when he went to speak in public places, when people met him in public, you know, everyone was bowled over what a nice bloke he was. People queued around the block to see him speak, all this kind of stuff. And it showed a incredible disconnect, not just like an average everyday one, an incredible disconnect between what the media, the mainstream especially, were pumping out and how people were actually perceiving someone. And what I did like about it is it was finally the left were, I felt, were getting serious about power, because that's one of the things we haven't done for a very long time. We've been very, very sniffy about big power for the last 30 years or so. But also because I think you're both absolutely right about communicating the messages of people and everything. That's extremely important. But it's also about, what is it that we want to do? Where do we want to take this? Because communicating messages about people's everyday lives and their suffering and the use of food banks, etc., is extremely important. But my goal is to prevent that from being their reality. And that's, and I might do it with union members because that's my direct involvement at the moment. I might do it in other ways with trying to use media like this to you know, amplify people's voices, whatever else. And I expect, you know, everyone to step forward and tell me if they think there's something we've put a foot wrong somewhere. There's no censorship here. I'm not looking for praise. If people think, no, actually, you could have done that better, that's what we want. But, you know, that's the goal, and that's, I suppose, is the ultimate reason for doing this now. It's also good fun, don't get me wrong. You know, making our own media is great laugh, as far as I'm concerned. And I think there's also a very important way to kind of tie that into culture. And actually, I think, Jamie, you've done that particularly well with your most recent book, which is Marx at the Arcade, where, you know, you have shown that not only is it important to highlight the world of entertainment, or a particular world of entertainment. It's funny, isn't it? You hear that on the business news, whatever, you know, billion dollar industry every year, and you immediately go, where's the billions going? You know, but also that cultural stuff is available. And I do think that's quite a good communication tool. Yeah, either of you come back on that, well, whenever you like.
So I think the plan is if we can get our heads together and think, okay, we'll do something on YouTube, for example. And how I do it is, rather than throw everything in it and throw everything that we all agree on, and we'll, okay, the whole is, we're going to talk about 8 hours about austerity, right? We could sneak it in some ways and try and get high profile inner city artists, that sort of thing, and talk about, you know, and because this, that might add a newer audience. I'm just saying that how we mix and match it and try not to use the same narrative that probably me, Jamie and John understand at austerity and food banks, but, you know, a lot of these high profile artists appeal to people that are using food banks but feel that no one's going to do anything about it, and that's their life sorted out, because nothing ever gets done in my town, nothing ever gets done in my borough. No one's got, politicians all talk rubbish and lie. There's that stigma, and, you know, and they don't understand the left, the right, the Houses of Parliament. They're never going to be involved in that. They're never going to aspire to anything. And it's how we talk to those people and how, what's happening in their community, and telling them, well, actually, if we do this politically, this is what can happen. Or if we all get together and we'll try and change that. Oh, really? You know, and they'll have an audience listening to them. Because, as I said, I agree with everything on left-wing media, what's out there, everything. I think things like Tribune, Navarra Media, Michael Moore, Bernie Sanders doing some wonderful stuff. I agree with that. But we just got to remember, and I think the Labour Party are looking at that. And if I had one, if I was a lottery winner, I'd do it tomorrow. I swear to God, I'd do it tomorrow. I'd start something on Sky or something.
Yeah, I think the video games one is a good example. I have a friend who runs a YouTube series. It's called Mariam. It's called Left, Left, Up. And, you know, she has this YouTube series about the politics of video games. And it's, you know, it works through like a whole number of some of those arguments about class, about where power is in society, but taking a starting point of a kind of media that lots of people, you know, regularly use, regularly engage with, and is like a really nice way of adding some politics and political discussion to something, rather than saying, you know, here's a YouTube series on politics, which, you know, I can't imagine a huge number of people would be like, yeah, I'm definitely going to, you know, hunt that out. So I think it's that question of like thinking about, yeah, how we can engage in some of those debates, whether it's about culture, whether it's, you know, with artists or people that already have a following, and like figure out how they can become a terrain of struggle where some of those ideas are had. But then, I mean, I guess the other thing is, you know, with a couple of friends, I run a website called Notes From Below, where we put stories of workers organizing, where they write them up in their own words, is also thinking about stuff like that. Like, how do you get, like, there are not many stories of people who've led a strike that you can easily find, or like examples of success stories. So I think there's like another kind of alternative media. Like, one is like, how do we intervene around things that are already happening? But then I think there's also has to be a space for like, these are our stories of like how people have done something, you know, how they won some power, how they had a victory that you can share with people. Because those stories are like a really few and far between in the media more generally.
Yeah, and that's a brilliant example. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I was just going to say, actually, during the period of time that the strike action has been going on, I don't know if you've been able to assess this with, you know, there's obviously quite a lot of things happening every day, but have you found any particular medium better at communicating your points about why this is happening than any other?
Yeah, so we do something that's both like a little bit old school, but then also we try and share it a bit more widely, is we run a like traditional workplace bulletin. So it's like a double-sided A4 printout, which is run by a kind of a group of rank and file people in the union, which we take to picket lines and we hand out to people. But then we also do a PDF of it and share it online, on Twitter, email it around and so on. Because in the last dispute that we had, we found that the union just didn't share information about what was happening. So if you were in London, you'd have like no idea how the strike was in Manchester or Newcastle. And so we run it a couple of times now. It's called the University Worker. And then we ask people on, you know, we put it up on Twitter and say, if you have been at a picket line today, email us. You know, send us a report, and then put all those reports together, print them out, hand them out. And there's actually like a really nice example of this in the last strike, is we were on a picket line and these two older members came over and said, you know, what are you doing? We're like, oh, we're handing out leaflets. I'm like, oh, right. You know, why are you handing out leaflets? We're like, well, you know, the union isn't telling us what's happening. So we, you know, we decided we'd just do it. And it turned out they were actually from the communications committee of the union. So it was a little bit of a, like, we were telling them that their communication had been terrible. And they took a few away and talked about it. But it kind of shows that lots of people just don't realize, you know, on a strike, you can just print stuff out and take it around. Like, nowadays, it's so easy to knock together a document, put it online and so on. And I think some of that's like reteaching ourselves, like, how these kind of, like, basic forms of communication can work, and then how you can use them politically in a strike, rather than like waiting for somebody else to tell us what's happening. And it gives people a sense of more control over the strike. You know, if you're writing your perspective and sharing it with people, you're like more able to make arguments about the dispute, which, you know, can only be a good thing, eh?
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a really, really good example. Actually, with that in mind, I was just going to say, so as you say, myself and Dave have spoke quite a lot about the print media and the fact that we kind of think it's dead. I think print media has kind of migrated online in a very specific way. So it's not just, you know, the typical just a couple of Facebook posts here, a couple of Twitter points here. I'm thinking Novara does this a little bit. I'm thinking Tribune, Jacobin, which are both actual physical magazines, but also have an online presence where they update stories every day in a traditional manner quite a lot of the time of, here's an article, this is what's happening, this is what, you know, breaking it down. The Intercept does that to some degree. Double Down News does it, but they seem to maybe do that more with videos, but it's effectively the same thing. So do you think they're, you know, this is maybe we've called for the demise, the death of print media in a manner of speaking, maybe a little bit early. Now it's just something you're going to get on a tablet on the way to work rather than pick up a physical piece of paper.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always about like, what are you doing with the print media when you have it? So I think that, you know, the strike bulletin, you know, there's a reason you print strike bulletins, is so you can go up to someone and give them a copy, ask them what they think of it, have that debate, have that discussion around it. You know, we could just do it as a PDF, it'd be cheaper, it'd be easier, and so on. But then you miss that kind of in-person discussion. And I think, you know, I think print media just plays a different role now. You know, people want to get their copy of Jacobin sent out to them so they can read it, you know, when they're on the bus or, you know, over coffee or whatever. And then people go on to these things regularly for the updated news. I think rather than it kind of seeing it as a demise, it's just a change in how people consume media. And I think, you know, around workplace politics or community politics, I think there's still a use for print because of those, you know, the connections it can form and those kind of in-person conversations. But then in other times we should use, yeah, more regular stuff that can be updated. I think we should see the form as being much more flexible now.
Yeah, I quite agree. Yeah. Dave, print media.
Well, whatever format it comes in, we've got to decide what things make people tick. So the first thing I would say to younger reps, and this would actually go to all wider community or society, especially with young people, is two probably things I'd say: money and if you're working or on a 0-hour contract, which is growing, annual leave or holiday. So we could center on that because those are the things that matter to most people. So money and annual leave or holiday. I say annual leave, that's a terminology, but it sounds like I'm in the army, but holiday. And we would talk about that and that they resonate with pretty much everyone. I'm happy to talk about other things, but and the narrative that we all know, Marxism and communism and socialism and austerity, but if we centre on the simple things like money and annual leave, and then we could actually, so for money, for example, we could talk about, well, actually, there is a political party that wants to raise the minimum wage, you know, or enforce tribunals to pay you while you're still on leave if you do regular overtime. Really? You know, a lot of people are surprised at that. That's actually enshrined in law. No one knows it. And by the way, that's actually extending to 12 months with the Conservative government. If you're on leave, they can only go back at the moment 3 months. The Conservative Party brought that ruling in this April, actually. It goes to 12 months. So we could just centre on that rather than throw everything in and just talk about those two things, because those two things are the most important to people. Whether you're young or old, those two things are important to people. And go out and interview them and replay it on podcasts or, you know, find a way. There has to be a way, but there has to be things that people, it resonates with people.
Dave, I just wanted to run something quickly by you. I asked Jamie this. We're talking about most effective means of communication that have taken place during his union's recent strike. What do you find for our union is our best form of communication above all of them?
What we do is we're finding we're getting the best reception, even in pockets where good union presence and good terms and conditions are running in some of those functions and units. But I just find it's true. There are people like the gate meetings. They like the collectivity. And when you see people crowding around and you've and people listening and engaged, I find that works the most. Obviously, WhatsApp, Facebook and Twitter. So the first thing people want to know about industrial action is, will it happen and how long will I lose money for? Really, that's really what they're there for. That's what they want to hear. Is this going to affect my income? As I mentioned, money. You know, so that's what it's about. And people want to know that, you know, they will support the industrial action. But how long is it going to last for? You know, people are close to the poverty line in a lot of cases. And that's why they're there for, and that's why you engage them. But the minute they hear that you're trying to negotiate, you're trying to get them and trying to get them to understand that if it's a positive yes vote, it doesn't necessarily mean industrial action. If they get to hear that industrial action is actually the last thing that we want, the first thing we want to do is use our skills to negotiate a collective agreement. That, you know, so what we're doing, we're paying now so we don't pay later, that sort of thing. And you remind them of the good terms and conditions. But I think sometimes people will ask questions outside the box, things like pensions, allowances, time off, flexible working, childcare, picking up kids from school. They'll want to know that the social media probably wouldn't be able to answer them in full. Because with social media, it's got to be bang. It's got to be four lines, that's it. Or picture, you know, that sort of thing. And I just can't get away or move away from the traditional forms of communication, which is face-to-face.
Yeah, Jamie was saying that the face-to-face works at that end. Okay, so summing this up. I'll just put my point, and then I'll knock back to the both of you to kind of do a little sum up of what you think going forward. We will come back to this point. It's going to be, as I said a couple of weeks ago when I was planning these shows, I said on air that this is going to be a big subject. It's going to go on for a while. Where I would see where I want to take all of this, obviously with the promotion of some of the aforementioned means that we spoke about earlier on, and I haven't even spoke about Means TV, which is an American one, but tune in for another episode, we'll talk about that then. I want to make culture, I want to make as much content as possible. It needs to be, have a level of discipline that perhaps I don't always possess now, as far as communication is concerned about its intent, but I also want to make a lot of culture, and I want it to be fun too, rather than, because that's why I can't do it on my own. Because, quite frankly, fellas, I'm not fun. I'm boring. I like theories. I spend my life in books. As I referred to earlier on, I said about listening to Navarro all day. Yeah, basically, I listen to podcasts all day when I'm at work. It's very conducive to the work that I do most of the time, because it's a way of clawing back something from my time spent making somebody else rich. It's like, yes, but at least I got a bit of a self-made education. So podcasts and such things, I think, are absolutely vital content, extremely important, and all the others that were mentioned. So we make as much culture as we possibly can. If you're out there, quite simple, it's the punk attitude. If you're out there and you've got a voice and you're not hearing somebody else say the things you want to say, say it yourself. Find a way of doing it. Get on the YouTube. I won't talk about much about Instagram because I don't understand it. But apparently that's a thing. Go on there. But also, most importantly, I would do it without compromise. There needs to be a level of aggression here, because I wish to destroy ignorance. I don't accept the mainstream attitude, the deeply insulting mainstream attitude, that the working class are just one big ignorant rump that you know, hate immigrants and you know, gay people and stuff like that. No, and that is a viewpoint. Now, that sounds funny. You might hear that and you might think, it's 2020, mate. What are you talking about? Just pay a little more attention to many of the messages the media communicates. I think they still do that a lot of the time. And they communicate the idea that you're not worth anything and that you're not worth fighting for by yourself or anybody else. And we need to address that very deeply.
Yeah, I mean, not too much to add to that, because I think that's exactly what the problem is and what we should do about it. Is, I think, yeah, just to emphasize, like, left media should be fun. And I think this is also true of like when we have face-to-face meetings and when we do stuff, is none of us want to go to meetings. You know, we want to change the world. And sometimes meetings and getting involved in media is one way to do that. But it doesn't mean that it should be dry. Like, these things should be fun. They should be exciting. They should be confrontational. And they should be part of winning people to a politics that tells them that they can play a role in it. And I think that's kind of the key, is like, how do we connect politics with people? Because our politics is about people changing the world.
I agree. I think that's perfectly put. It's to get people to believe that they can make a change. I think that's it. I think if we can get that across in using social media, using a media platform, and how we do that. Listen, if there's 300,000 of us and there's more that think the same, I'd give £1 a week to start a station or TV station. But it's about telling and convincing people and getting influential people from the dance scene, from the hip-hop scene, from the grime scene, and convincing people, which we did in two elections. As I said, unprecedented amounts registered to vote. That's something to build on. And if we try and convince people that we can make a change and politics can make a change, as I said, money and annual leave is a good place to start. But I think we're seeing things that we've never seen before. Certainly I'm the oldest bloke in the room at the moment, and I saw things that I've never seen before in regards to these two general elections. However, the downside of it was the mainstream media made it extremely a toxic place, and I don't think people were enjoying it towards the end.
Yep, very well put. You're only just the oldest one, mate. I'm not far behind you. I'm feeling it every day. Anyway, just in closing, Jamie, as we got you here, so in regards to a strike action you spoke about at the beginning, how can the rest of us average everyday listeners support you best?
Well, the first thing is being on a picket line earlier and seeing the post not getting delivered was a great moment, as always, on a lecturer's picket line. But for other people, you know, if you're involved in some kind of media, like, put out a message of support, put it out on Twitter, put it out on Facebook. And then, you know, if you've got time, come and visit one of the picket lines. One of the things that we've tried to do is to run teach outs on the picket line, have participatory things that people can get involved with. So, you know, feel free to pop down and say hello to people on strike and to get involved in some of the activities.
Cool. Okay. Jamie, Dave, thank you both very much for being on All The Rage. This thing will very much be continued. And stay tuned, folks, because we've got a lot more to say on this subject. Thanks, both. Cheers.
All The Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.